Wondery Plus subscribers can binge new seasons of American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. In the summer of 1979, disco reigned supreme in America. Artists like Donna Summer and Anita Ward took the top spots in Billboard's Hot 100 charts. And disco had a profound influence across a range of musical acts. The genre's sound was everywhere, in the music of Barbra Streisand and the Rolling Stones, even Kiss, to name just a few. Disco sold countless records and was a dominant force in the music industry. But despite its popularity, disco faced a backlash. It was a response in part to the culturally diverse audience who made up disco's fan base, including Black, Latinx, and LGBTQ people. And it was a backlash that came to a head one night in July of 1979 at a Major League Baseball game. It was an event that became known as Disco Demolition Night. At the time, a man named Steve Dahl was a rock DJ in Chicago, but he'd been fired from his job at WDAI, a radio station that was switching its format from rock to disco and playing hits like Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. But Dahl would not go quietly. He took to the airwaves at a competing station called The Loop and began scratching disco records on air. He'd follow that by an explosion sound effect. Dahl took the fight off the air, too, and started hosting what he called Death to Disco rallies, where he'd destroy records at nightclubs. Dahl's contempt for disco wasn't just about losing his job, though. He raged against the whole culture of disco and the look of men with coiffed hair and fitted jumpsuits who loved to dance. Dahl maintained that disco demeaned the ordinary life that kids inhabited in favor of Manhattan glitz. So Dahl hatched a plan. He partnered with a promotion manager from the White Sox baseball team, and together they planned an anti-disco rally, which would take place in between back-to-back baseball games. For the promotion, patrons could enter the stadium for just 98 cents, but they had to bring a disco record, one that Dahl would blow up in a dumpster on field between the games. That night, on July 12, 1979, about 50,000 people came to the stadium to destroy records. Dahl took to center field and lit the fuse. Fans yelled in support, some threw records and beer bottles, and soon a mob of people stormed the field. Now, more than 40 years later, many believe that night wasn't really about disco, but that it was about something deeper, a reaction to cultural diversity and changes in power and culture in America. Vince Lawrence was at Comiskey Park on Disco Demolition Night. Since then, he's gone on to become a music producer and documentary filmmaker, and he's credited as a pioneer of house music. He's here to talk about the meaning behind Disco Demolition Night and how disco music influenced other genres long before it was presumed dead. Here's our conversation. American Scandal is sponsored by the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office. Following one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in British legal history, the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, is based on the shocking true story of the British Post Office scandal. When money started to seemingly disappear from local branches, the government-owned post office wrongly blamed their own managers for its apparent loss. And for more than a decade, hundreds were accused of theft and fraud. Many were even sent to prison, leaving lives, marriages, and reputations in ruins. But the issue was actually caused by errors in the post office's own computer system, something it denied for years. Don't miss Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office, starring Toby Jones, beginning Sunday, April 7th on Masterpiece on PBS. The series will be available to stream on the PBS app, PBS Masterpiece Prime Video Channel, and PBS.org. American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. Vince Lawrence, welcome to American Scandal.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here today.
So you were at Comiskey Park on Disco Demolition Night. What brought you to the game that night?
Well, I guess that starts a few months prior when I asked my dad for some money to go to summer camp. And my dad says, well, I can't afford to send you to summer camp this year, but we're going to figure out something for you to do for the 2 weeks while your friends are basically all away. And my dad's good friend is a man by the name of Eddie Thomas, who is the Tom in Kurt Tom Records. He's a record legend, and he was managing a recording artist by the name of Captain Sky. And Eddie said, well, let's just put him on the tour bus for a couple weeks and sent me on the road with Captain Sky. I was on the road for 2 weeks as their pyrotechnician.
That's a cool gig for any young man.
14 years old. So I was on the road with Captain Sky, and he had a bunch of, you know, really popular records and stuff like that. And it was a very exciting time for me. When I came back, I sort of knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be in the music business, and I knew I wanted to work with synthesizers. So I got a job as an Andy Frame usher, which basically allowed me to get into concerts for free. And I started saving money for my first synth. So Disco Demolition, the event at Comiskey Park, all events at Comiskey Park were basically 8 or 9 blocks away from my house. And that was a double shift. So I was there to try to make a little bit of money to save towards my first synthesizer.
So explain what led up to this night. You were there working, had a first-hand view, but you also knew the context. Where did this come from?
It's kind of funny. I really didn't see the full context of what was going on because I was 14. But Steve Dahl was on the radio. Apparently, he had been fired from WDAI, which had changed its format from rock to disco. And he was full on against disco. And he was making fun of people who wore leisure suits and platform shoes or gold chains around their neck, et cetera. And he had created an event called the Disco Demolition. And his idea was that he was going to detonate a bunch of disco records in the center of Comiskey Park in between two games of a doubleheader. The rule was bring a disco record and get into the ball game for 98.7 cents. Tens of thousands of people came, far more people than were expected to be at this game. That's where it all really began.
What sort of records did you see people carrying in?
When I was taking tickets at the gate, I noticed that a lot of the records weren't necessarily disco records. They were just black records of all sorts. And I asked my chief usher, I said, hey, if a record's not a disco record, does that person still get in for 98.7 cents? And my chief usher said, well, if they bring a record, take their ticket and let them in. And that's what we did.
We have an instance in which nominally a popular DJ loses his job to a genre of music he doesn't enjoy. And he's, you know, maybe even rightfully disgruntled about that. But he whips up a bit of a frenzy and invites thousands of people to show up to a discounted baseball game on the condition that they bring a disco record. But you discover that it's not just disco records they're bringing. It's any
just
black records.
Just black records, mostly. People have asked me about that, you know, whether or not some people looked at all black records as disco records, or, you know, whether or not people could tell the difference. And, you know, I noticed that there were no John Denver records in the going into the bin. You know, true enough, Saturday Night Fever by the Bee Gees, there were Saturday Night Fever records, you know, going in by the dozen. But by and large, a lot of the urban funk R&B records were thrown into this pile, considered disco, and fit to be destroyed.
So that's the beginning of the night. People are entering with their records, getting discounted tickets. Then what happened?
Well, I mean, there was a baseball game, and, you know, after the gates closed, most of the ushers moved to the inside to help people get to their seats and stuff like that. And there's minimal security on the along the perimeter of the field. And I was along the third baseline in the boxes, and there were people throwing records onto the field. Records were flying like Frisbees. And I guess that was the beginning of, you know, what became a pretty rowdy, raucous evening, more like a rock concert than a baseball game.
Was there a turning point, do you think, in the evening that you thought, okay, now the crowd is getting out of hand?
Well, we got through the game, and Steve came out and, you know, made his proclamations about disco and said, we're here to blow up disco, and everybody yelled, disco sucks, disco sucks. And they set off the fireworks underneath the dumpsters of phonograph records. And when the records went flying into the air, the crowd rushed the field, and all manner of mayhem broke loose. There were kids climbing the third base foul line. You know, they were ripping up turf, you name it. It just, you know, it became what is now called the Sox Park Riot.
Was there an objective to this riot? People in crowds especially can get whipped up a bit, but to what end?
Well, I mean, they were there to celebrate the destruction of disco. And the company I work with told everyone to go back to their lockers, get dressed and go home, and that the police were coming to take over and help deal with the crowd control from that point forward. And on my way back to the locker, I noticed all of these people kind of getting in my face, you know, yelling disco sucks. And I remember unbuttoning my Usher uniform shirt and kind of trying to reveal that I had a Loop t-shirt on underneath to try to state like, hey, you know, I'm a rock listener too. And at one point, someone kind of rushed towards me yelling disco sucked, and they took an album and just snapped it in half, you know, with splinters flying towards my face. At that point, I felt like it was pretty unsafe. And when I went back to my locker, I thought that I should probably keep my flashlight outside of my duffel bag because it seemed that people might be prone to being, you know, violent towards the rest of us ushers. Most of us were Black.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
There seems to be a pretty obvious subtext here. And I'd like to explore your thoughts because you were there and faced intimidation and, you know, possible violence. I think anyone could understand that you may not like a genre of music.
I think anyone could understand that there's a cultural element to it, and that it arises something you don't like or don't approve of, you can be vocally against. The event itself can sort of make sense. But that clearly wasn't what happened from the beginning to the end. Nominally, these are albums that these people purchased and enjoyed. There wasn't any mass looting of disco records just to destroy them. They're throwing away their own money. And they're throwing away their own money on records that they know are not disco, anecdotally at least, seem to be predominantly black records. And then you get targeted as a, in quotes, disco lover. You have to try and show allegiance to another form of music to, you know, to guarantee your safety. And we all know that, as you just said, that most of the ushers faced this treatment and most of the ushers were black. What were your thoughts about the underbelly of this evening?
Well, at the time, I just thought it would be okay if I could get to the east side of the Dan Ryan Expressway, because I felt pretty safe there. Strangely enough, the Dan Ryan Expressway at 35th Street, there's a cultural divide where black residents live to the east of the expressway and white residents live to the west. So it was like, hey, let me get home back on the east side of the Dan Ryan. In retrospect, you know, the fact that I was safer in the projects than at the oldest baseball field in America, that's kind of jacked up looking at it in retrospect. At the time Disco Demolition happened, the thing that the news wanted to talk about most was the fact that there was a forfeiture and the fact that the field got torn up. And the fact that, you know, a group of people's culture got torn up, you know, wasn't even topic for discussion. I think that one person, a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine, pointed it out. But that was really the only press coverage that pointed to the fact that Disco Demolition was likely racist and homophobic. I think now looking at that, that's the most shocking. I shouldn't say shocking at this point, given the nature of the unrest and everything that's going on in the country right now. I shouldn't say shocking, but I just think that it's clear that that's how things were then. And we have indicators to state that that's how things are now. And we can only hope for change as a path forward. I mean, that's it. That's all we can do is, hey, you know, we'd like to see things be different. But it seems that to the eye, that maybe they're just not.
We've had similar news reports that focus on destruction of property, when in fact it might have been much more appropriate to focus on the cultural implications of protest. Do you draw any parallels to what happened then in the media to what might have been the media coverage of, for instance, the Black Lives Matter movement?
I don't really have to draw any parallels, because Disco Demolition celebrated the destruction of largely black culture, and Disco Demolition has been celebrated year after year after year by the White Sox and the White Sox organization at their baseball stadium. So, I mean, despite the fact that there's been commentary and despite the fact that there have been protests, until last year, the White Sox continued to celebrate the anniversary of Disco Demolition. So I don't have to draw any parallels from then to now, because the fact that this behavior is accepted as good fun, that's the statement in itself.
Of course, Disco Demolition Night didn't get rid of disco music. Its sound was adopted and built upon by other genres. Where can we hear the influence of disco after it was presumed to be dead, killed that night, maybe?
You know, they said by and large, you know, disco music died that day, and dance music carried on, you know, where there were these huge shrines to dancing and celebrating. Dance music and dance music culture moved to underground loft parties, you know, impromptu warehouse events and stuff like that. And I was working on music. I got that synthesizer eventually. I was working on records that became the first house music records.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You and fellow producer Jesse Saunders released On and On in 1984. So that's just 5 years after this event. You're still a young man, age 19, I guess. It's considered to be a pioneering song in house music. How did disco influence what you were doing?
It wasn't just disco. We were listening to, in Chicago, a weird mix of disco, funk records, R&B, Italian imports, experimental music like Kraftwerk and stuff like that. We were listening to a very eclectic mix of danceable music. There was Fad Gadget. There was records on Soul Soul and Prelude, along with James Brown. And heck, Rock Lobster by the B-52s was in rotation at these teen parties, mostly attended by middle-class Black kids on the South Side. Really, the music we were making, we were trying to capture the energy of these parties because these events were unique. They were events for largely Black teenagers thrown largely by Black teenagers. And we were all young entrepreneurs. And I guess instead of, you know, paper routes or taking people to their seats at ball games, I had gotten into the business of throwing parties for my friends. So the records we were trying to make were kind of reflective of the energy from those parties.
Just a quick aside, the origins of the term house, as in house music, are debated. Some people think that it's named after the Chicago club, The Warehouse. Others think it might be an attempt to replicate the music that we're playing at house parties. Where do you think the name came from?
Well, there were parties thrown in people's houses, yes. And there were parties thrown at impromptu loft spaces that were available for rent and such like that. And we threw our parties at a place called Sours, which was a German restaurant. We would rent the restaurant and move all of the tables to one end of the restaurant to create this stadium style event space where people could just dance. And so a lot of the music that DJs like the Chosen Few were playing were records that Wayne Williams was scouting from gay parties like the Den One and the Warehouse. And if we looked at the independent party scene, the Warehouse was the epitome of that. And people were really trying to capture the energy being laid down by Frankie Knuckles at the Warehouse. So house music, the term, comes from, you know, as far as I can remember, the first I can remember was my friend Haynes and Reggie Corner coming up to the DJ booth saying, "Hey man, play that music like they play at the Warehouse." And then that got shortened to warehouse music. You know, we want to hear some warehouse music, to shortened again to, you know, yo, play that house music because we're going to the house after this party closes. And the house was short for the Warehouse.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Black music has persisted and been popular, not just in the Black communities, but broadly across the United States, and been adopted by white musicians and white audiences from the very beginning. Saturday Night Fever, which you mentioned, was a clear example of a very popular white band, Australian actually, who took the genre and moved it into a market that it hadn't seen before. How are we seeing, if at all, that pattern play out today?
Well, it's funny. The same kids that would have packed Kaminsky Park for Disco Demolition are now packing stadiums all over the world, you know, celebrating EDM culture, which is basically our generation's disco. And hip-hop culture is pop culture now. So, I mean, just as we had Elvis kind of imitating the moves and music of Southern Black artists, we have Justin Bieber that's creating music that's largely urban by design.
Tell us about your documentary, Legacy, The Untold History of Chicago Black Music.
Legacy aired November 12th on PBS here in Chicago, WTTW Channel 11. It may still be streaming. And Legacy kind of covers some hidden figures in Black music history in Chicago. And because I am so actively involved in house music culture, a lot of people would jump to the conclusion that this is a documentary about the origins of house music. But really, it's a story that points to Black entrepreneurialism. It's a story that points to Black fathers investing in their sons. It's a story that points to the stick-to-itiveness that Black culture has maintained from the 50s to now. And it started from a question that I had, which was, why isn't Tom Washington in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Now, for those who don't know, Tom Washington is a string and horn arranger, which means he writes the horn parts for records and stuff like that. And he was pretty good at it, having had written the horn parts for September by Earth, Wind & Fire, Can You Feel It, and Heartbreak Hotel for the Jacksons, and even Sicilio for Phil Collins. Everybody knows September. And everybody remembers those horns. And I was sitting around with some friends. I said, why isn't Tom Washington in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And this documentary is my attempt to shine a light on Tom Washington and Eddie Thomas, who had the gumption to put me on that tour bus with Captain Sky, who's also covered. Captain Sky's record Super Sperm was a founding bedrock for which many early rappers were rapping on top of in the beginning of that art form. And between Tom Washington, Eddie Thomas, Captain Sky, the chosen few DJs and those parties they were throwing, and Marshall Jefferson, who went on to write the house music anthem, Move Your Body, I thought that there was just an interesting story of Black people making music through whatever, no matter what.
You mentioned that you got that synthesizer. What was it? You still have it?
It was a Moog Prodigy.
A Prodigy.
Yes, a Moog Prodigy. That was my first synth. And it was stolen from the apartment that we lived in a few years later. But I've gotten a lot more since then. You know, our current studio contains somewhere north of 80 synthesizers.
I know that there's a certain magic when you find the right instrument, especially early on in your career. Just tell me, when you hit your first note on that Prodigy, what did you feel?
It was the ability to create just about any sort of sound with this instrument. It was pure joy for me because it was a combination of two things I loved: music and science. You know, I was just this happy kid experimenting. You know, one day I wanted to be Gary Numan and make the sounds that I heard on his records. Another day I wanted to be craft work and recreate those drums. And most of the time, I just kind of wanted to be Captain Sky.
Well, here's to music and science, two of the purest things in the universe. Vince Lawrence, thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me.
That was my conversation with Vince Lawrence, a music producer and documentary filmmaker, whose latest project is Legacy, the untold history of Chicago black music. You can find a link to the film in the show notes. Next on American Scandal. From the late 1970s to the mid-1990s, a new menace emerged in the United States. He was known as the Unabomber, and he was intent on using violence to change the direction of the country. The Unabomber's real name was Ted Kaczynski, and his sophisticated bombs would injure 23 people and kill three. The manhunt to find him would become the longest-lasting and most expensive case in FBI history, and it would only end with a gut-wrenching decision. From Wondery, this is the Riot at Comiskey Park for American Scandal. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review, and be sure to tell your friends. And if you're interested in another music story, check out Wondery's new series, Jacked, which looks at the birth of New Jack Swing. Subscribe to American Scandal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen to episodes 1 week early and ad-free. You'll also find some links and offers from our sponsors in the episode notes. Supporting them helps us keep offering our shows for free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey to tell us what topics we might cover next. You can also find us and me on Twitter. Search for #AmericanScandal or follow me at Lindsey A. Graham. Be sure to listen to my other podcasts too, American History Tellers and American Elections Wicked Game. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. This episode is produced by Audrey Ngo. Our senior producer is Gabe Riven. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery. Wondery Plus subscribers can binge American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy American Scandal, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. I read every one of them. I also have two other Wondery podcasts you might like, American History Tellers and Business Movers. Follow American Scandal on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of American Scandal early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. And to find out more about me, including my other podcasts, go to notthatlindseygraham.com. That's notthatlindseygraham.com.